Hello, welcome to Family Tree Talk. My name's Helen Tovey. I'm editor of Family Tree, and with me is
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
And we love talking about family history. And in particular, I'm really excited, Nathan, this week, because our topic is how to get better doing family history. And who doesn't want to do that?
Sounds good to me. I definitely need that.
Well, we all need it. I think that's the thing. Everybody, however long you've done family history, you need to keep getting better, keep learning new stuff.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, I'm constantly lost and feeling like I'm missing loads of valuable things. So, yeah, teach me everything you know.
Well, I don't know everything. I only know a tiny bit. So I teach you my tiny bit. Like, I teach you how to make a jam sandwich. And there's a whole lot of other stuff out there that I couldn't possibly teach you. Couldn't teach you how to do a Sunday roast or whatever. I can actually do a roast, but not like a genealogy roast. So I've been having a think about ways to get better at doing family history. And definitely something really struck me. So we did this publication, which is absolutely fantastic. It only came out very recently on DNA. And we asked lots of DNA experts for their views on how, you know, what was good about DNA, what could they recommend? And one of the experts, Laura House, said education is absolutely just, you know, unbeatable. What you've got to do is educate yourself about DNA, and whether that's doing courses, reading books, whatever. And it made me think how important it is when we're doing our family history just to step away sometimes, away from those kind of search screens, and learn about stuff so we can kind of dive back in again and we've got a lot more knowledge under our belts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely guilty of this. I honestly bury my head in the sand as soon as the word DNA is mentioned. And I know, obviously, I joked about the Viking stuff, but now I'm into the actual doing the family tree stuff. Anytime you mention DNA, I secretly sort of grimace on the inside. Maybe not secretly, who knows? But yeah, I do. I need to know about it, though. I need to know what it is and how to use it. Because at the moment, it's just this elusive thing that you keep talking about and how useful it is for family trees. But I don't see that connection yet. All I see is something terrifying and new and different that I'm not using. And like, why do I need to use it?
I think that's probably what all of us feel like. Because when you're trying to learn about something, you can feel overfaced. You don't know where to start. Or there's so many things that you wish you could learn about. And you're trying to allocate, you know, your precious time. We're all super busy, aren't we?
Yep.
So this is like, we're not very sort of pluggish sort of podcast, but this is just too good not to plug. So if anybody wants to learn about DNA and they haven't bought a copy of our DNA Discoveries publication yet, then they really, really should. It's 100 pages and it's perfect for anybody. If they're thinking about taking a test, tick, it's perfect for you. If you've taken a test and you're waiting for your results to come back, or you've recently got your results back, tick, it's perfect for that. If you've got your results back and you've been looking through your match list and you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, tick, it's perfect for that. If you've been looking through your match list, you're getting it pretty sorted, you've made some cool little discoveries, you've worked out how some of your matches relate to you, and you want to take it further and you want to learn, for instance, about DNA projects and you know, how you can build out your DNA knowledge beyond just your basic autosomal match list, tick, it covers that as well, just in 100 pages. And what I love about it, I'm a bit of an old granny. Well, I am actually a granny, but I love a print publication because it can just sit there and you're not going to kind of lose it. It's going to be there in your house.
Yeah, come through it at your leisure.
Exactly. Yeah, I love scribbling on things, sticking those little sticky notes on.
Oh no, this is another thing. This is another DNA trait. Do not bend spines on books. Do not kill corners. Do not write on things.
I do it all. Do you know, apparently in the 1700s, then I only read this recently on somebody else's e-newsletter, and I'm really sorry, I can't remember whose it was. It's somebody who loves old books. But in the 1700s, then books were published with blank pages in them on purpose so you could write in the book. And I was like, that's my kind of book.
Yeah, no, it still makes me shudder on the inside.
Yeah.
I like my books to be like on my shelf and look like nobody's touched them or read them. Pristine condition.
My descendants are going to fall into two camps, aren't they? So my descendants who are like you, they're literally going to wilt when they look inside my books because there'll be corners turned over, things scribbled all down the margins, things underlined, heavily underlined, marked in highlighter pen to rhyme by stupid head, what I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be, so some of them are going to wilt and just think she's beyond the pale. how can she say she loves books when she treats them like this? And then I do love books. And then there's going to be others of them who'll be like, oh, wow, look at great granny. Look at her little notes in the olden days when they used to write in a pen.
They'll be able to like follow a journey of your mind through your book.
They will. Yeah, that's not an easy job. But yeah. So anyway, back to education. That book is really good. And then we at Family Tree, we do loads of courses, and it's a bit of a busy time. We are a bit frazzled and busy at the moment, aren't we, Nathan? But it's all for a good end. And we're putting together really cool courses. So, and these I mentioned the other week, they're all good things for you. So one of them is about DNA, but we won't mention that anymore for the minute. Another is to do with research skills. And so that's really helpful to help you not go around in circles, to help people be methodical, to help people be organized, to help people keep good records of what they find and kind of have a clear step-by-step approach in their mind so that they can tackle their genealogy in an orderly way. Because then when you know what you've done, you can identify kind of why it's worked and why it's not worked and what else you might want to try. Anyway, so Dr. Sophie Kay, she's going to be starting a 4-week course at the end of April on that. And then I think that is the end of my shameless plugging it. But there's so many other things I want to talk about because, you know, I keep banging on that I'm going to all the things I want to do. And I still am being very naughty at progressing very much with my Pickerings, but because I've got completely sidetracked with my grandpa's. He was an air gunner in the Second World War. And because of VE Day, the 80th anniversary, all at this time of year coming around, and the 80th anniversary of VE Day, I thought I'm going to really go through his logbook. And I've done it for my other grandpa because I got copies of his logbook. Anyway, my dad actually gave me my grandpa's logbook, and it's amazing. It's this little scruffy book. I can quickly show it to you, Nathan. And it's got mould on the cover, but I don't mind a bit of mould, it's okay. And it's got his name on it, and it says he's an air gunner and observer. And that was apparently a pretty dangerous job, because you were very conspicuous in some of the planes, and people would try and, you know, take you out, obviously, because they didn't want you shooting at them and stuff like that. Anyway, so I started transcribing his logbook. And I'm such a nerd. I love transcribing things. And it's just, I find it really calming. And you just read what you read and type it out. And I started transcribing his logbook. And I thought, what are you doing? Because some of it's typed. So I'm like, you're a really busy person. This is a really bad use of your time to type up something which is already typed. You should just take a digital picture of it, shove it in your family tree, don't worry about it. And I'm going to grab it and read it out. On the first page that I was transcribing, it had the results of his gunnery school. And it said, so that he went to B&G school, and it said he went to the place he went to. And so I went down, where's the blooming first page? Here we go. First page, page one, says certificates of qualification. It goes, this is to certify that 613783 Corporal Burke, WOM, is qualified as an air gunner with effect from 28th to 6th, 41. It goes on and on like this. So half of this is typed. Only a few bits of it is handwritten. So it felt pointless. Apart from when I got to like the third line, it said W/CD. I said, I don't know what this is. And I thought, this is why transcribing is always, always worth it. Because it makes you don't just take a picture of it. You have to suddenly drill down to every little micro detail. Because then I'd feel like such a fraud to my kids if I just typed it all up and hadn't got a clue what it meant. So straight away, my journey from hurtling around was in micro slow detail. As word by word, I had to keep stopping, Googling, working it out. And I just love the snedier. So I had my Word document, had to go from being a one-page Word document. I had to set a table in there with three columns. The first column has my transcription. The second column has my notes, so things I've worked out. So I worked out, you know, what some of the definitions meant. That goes in my second column. My third column has my queries, i.e. things I have yet to work out. Don't you love it? Isn't that so organised?
Really, really geeky.
It's so geeky. So, but anyway, I just thought that's back to the thing of how to get better at family history is I honestly think we live such busy lives and we're always trying to accomplish so much. But it's almost like medicinal when you start taking family history really, really slow. It's like escape from hecticness.
It is. And like for me, obviously, I've thrown myself down a few rabbit holes recently. felt guilty about it, but equally was really enjoying it. So there shouldn't be any guilt. I should, if I want to focus on them, I should focus on them and not feel guilty about not progressing my tree backwards. But this last week, I went back to my tree and I just saw massive names and like lots of details that weren't filled in. And I'm like, I need to go back and find all them and do all them. And then I equally started panicking. I was like, well, if I went down a rabbit hole just on one tangent, what happens if I do it on every single one? I'm never going to get anywhere. And then I felt like a rabbit in the headlights. It was just, you know, there's so much to do and so much to take in. But it is, like you say, it's just about slowing down and being like, this is fun. It's an enjoyable thing. Do the bits that you're enjoying. Stay calm. And but it's hard. It's hard to, well, for me personally, it's hard to see that sometimes because I do, as I've mentioned before, I want the completionist feel. I want to get all these holes filled in. I wasn't expecting to find stories and learn about the people. I was just expecting birth, death, marriage dates. Tick, you're done.
You agree though, don't you? When you slow down and take that time to go down those rabbit holes, I just love a rabbit hole. I think they get really bad press, and that, but they are when we really, really learn and find out there's micro details. And that's the whole point of family history. It's not just the story of a random Second World War soldier or a random coal miner. It's your specific soldier or coal miner or baker or whoever, isn't it? And that's, yeah, that's the magic in it. I think we've mentioned a few ways. So definitely we're talking about, you know, how to get better at family history, then taking that time to, you know, book ourselves on courses or webinars is good. Taking that time not to try and be quick, just to be slow, transcribe the records. And that can apply to everything, like even census records, because it's really tempting. We always say with family history, we should get the original record and that's the kind of holy grail. And I think that is kind of the holy grail, that you've got, you know, whether it's a digitized copy, that's okay, but you've got a digitized copy of the original record. So it's up to you. It's your eyes then reading what's on that page, with the help very often of the websites, you know, who've transcribed it, because they get bad press. But equally, if you're finding the handwriting hard to read, they're actually a best thing as well, aren't they? So you've got that original record, but again, taking the time to transcribe it, it just slows your brain down. Like with me, that's the only way I can slow my brain down enough to actually think.
Yeah. Well, like the thing for me is like, I'm like, again, trying to do it layer by layer, but I don't think that's really possible, because as soon as I get one person's marriage certificate, then I get their father's name. And then I'm like, well, I need to find that father's wife. And you're going back in that direction as opposed to all the people that are the great, great, great grandparents getting further back, which is obviously a good thing. But you can't stop yourself, can you? Because once you start that learning path, once they start, all these names come at you, it's like, I need to get these down on paper now whilst they're in my face. You can't be like, right, okay, this person's grandparents are these people. I'll go to my other side's grandparents and find their grandparents. You can't do it that way at all.
No way.
As much as I mentally want to do it that way, because that kind of feels organized, but it isn't. It would be so stop-start to do it that way, whereas just following one path is back, not necessarily as far as you can, but as far as it easily lets you. I don't know.
No, I think you're completely right. It's just a total waste of energy to put false stops in and force yourself to go into something else. Because your brain's in the right space and you're following a train of thought, aren't you?
Definitely. And as soon as you're getting these new names pop up, it's that thrill and that excitement. It's like, oh, this is so-and-so's grandparent. Oh, this is so-and-so's parent. Great. Then they're going to need a wife. They're going to have siblings. And then all these new names start coming in. Like, it's this is slightly tangential, but I've fallen in love with the Church of England marriages and bans certificates. That's now my new favourite resource.
I love it.
It's obviously, it only really helps you on the father line, doesn't it, for everyone? But you're getting father's names on both sides. You're getting maiden names of the wife. And then, like this week, I've noticed, obviously, like there's people in attendance, and that's quite interesting because they might not necessarily be related, but a lot of them do seem to be. But it gives you a clue as to the names you should then be looking for when I'm searching further back. So I feel like as an investigator, I'm learning new skills that I'm not.
Definitely. I'm proud of you noticing all these details on the record, not just getting the key names, looking at all of the details.
Christopher. It's still quite hard. Like you said, sometimes reading these handwriting bits, it's like, oh my God, what name is that? But yeah, it's good. It's giving me hints and it's keeping me focused. So I like it. What's Bans? What's B-A-N-N-S? What's that?
So did you get married in a church?
I did not.
No. So if you get married in a church, then for 3 weeks prior to your marriage date, then the bans get read out. And I don't know what the meaning of bans is, but literally the priest will read out and say, does anyone, you know any reason why these people can't get married? And they do it for 3 Sundays in a row in church. And the people who are going to get married, I think they have to go and listen to their bans getting read out. Potentially somebody could stand up and go, do you know what? They can't actually get married.
Right.
Yeah.
I do remember seeing that. Like, I don't know which document that was, but it had like the marriage recorded, but then it had dates like prior. So yeah, now that makes sense. Cool.
And I mean, very occasionally you do need to watch out, just because the bans have been read, then it doesn't necessarily mean that a marriage followed, because for instance, someone could object, or it's very rare circumstances, somebody could die. So normally it is going to be followed by a marriage shortly afterwards, but it's to kind of dot the I's or whatever. You need to make sure that marriage definitely did happen. Yeah.
But I love that document. It's awesome.
I love the fact you're getting favourite family history records as well. It's good.
I'm becoming a geek.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seems like a quick hit. Like, obviously, like I said, I've been doing my rabbit holes, getting lost in them, and I've neglected trying to progress the tree back anywhere. And I opened my Excel document up, and I actually... It gave me the fear. I was like, oh my God, that's a lot of information. These are a lot of people. Look at all these details I'm missing. And I had a little freak out, but then I was like, right, no, calm down. Just choose someone, see if you can find their parents, or see if you can find their marriage certificate. And I got a few of these marriage documents appear, and it just suddenly I started filling in details, and then I'm getting to my, is it what? Great, great, great. Yeah, 3 times removed grandparents. I'm getting a few more names coming in now that I didn't have. So that feels like an instant win. It's, you know, it's a quick fix, but it's got me doing something positive and productive, as opposed to just staring at all these gaps I've got and thinking, oh my God, how am I going to find that?
Definitely. And I'm just so proud of you listening to you. So you're just casually saying things which you don't realise how well you're doing. Just the fact that when you're looking at old records, you're scouring them for details. You're not just grabbing one or two details off them. You're making sure you've got every last clue. And even if you can't, you're finding it hard to read the names of the people who are in attendance or witnesses and things like that, because they haven't been transcribed, you're getting a flavour, and they'll be, potentially going to stand you in good stead in the future. And then when you say you opened up your Excel sheet and the details that you'd recorded there kind of gave you the heebie-jeebies, and the gaps gave you the heebie-jeebies. But imagine if you hadn't written that down. Imagine, because you've been researching now for a couple of months, and you know, you're a busy person, so you have to pick your research up, put it down, do other things, come back to it however long later, especially when you've got sidetracked by a few rabbit holes, then maybe longer than you thought. And without that record, you literally wouldn't know where you were. So you recording it is just helping yourself. It's enabling you to pick up and down your research. So that's another thing where I think that's a really good way to get better at doing family history, is to log it, to record what you do. And you're already doing that step. And that applies to all of us, whether we're doing beginner family history, just researching really close generations, or whether we're doing a massive project and we're a blooming expert. It doesn't matter. All of us just need to do that. And
yeah.
Most, I don't know whether most people do. Surprising, a lot of people don't. And I used to be a not recorder. I used to be a gung-ho, think I'll remember it. And it makes me wince, my time wasted.
Yeah, and it's like an interesting thing as well, because I think I'm getting better at recording things. But within this conversation of me saying, yeah, I've just looked at these records and found out people in attendance, and I've got family names that are related to people, I should have put that on my research log. Which I haven't done. I've clocked them in my head, but I haven't put their names down. Because if I put them in my research log, then later on when I'm looking for Joseph so-and-so and I find a record with him and, I don't know, 2 daughters, if those names match the name on my research log, I'll be like, yes, I'm on the right path. So
yes,
it's part of that.
And you'll be able to do a quick find. It will
yeah.
That'll be time well spent. And probably, I don't know how many records you've looked at, but you'll probably find, Gabe, if you have half an hour this evening, you can go through the records you found, those marriage records you found, have a look for any relations, or they might not be relations, but, you know, people in attendance or whatever. It'd probably be quicker than you think to quickly set up a column on your Excel sheet, add them, and then you've got one findable database.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah.
And it won't be as long as you think. And it's always better to do it before you get too much of a backlog or anything, because tackling a backlog is daunting, a bit depressing.
Yeah. Well, I think this week I've only found 3 of these records, but obviously that's led to 6 new people and a few maiden names of the ladies, obviously. So that's, for me, that feels like a really big win. I've got a lot of new things on my tree, but I could potentially have, I don't know, up to 4 or 5 other names that might be siblings or whatever. Yeah, I think I might do that.
I think you should do that.
Yeah. It's just connecting the dots, isn't it? It's like you've said to me before, people have the same name. How do I know that's my George if there's 12 that are similar? Whereas if I can then relate to one of those names, that's someone in attendance at the wedding. It's like, oh, yeah, definitely the dots are connecting up. Mm. I think I've said before, there's a family line where all the kids are called, everyone's called David. There's like 3 or 4 generations of David. And then I was looking at one of those today, and his dad was called David John. He was called David John, and his dad was called David John. So they've both got the exact same middle name as well as the first name. So it's so confusing to distinguish the two. Obviously, I can look at the dates and stuff, but when you're going through so many documents, it can baffle in a bit.
Are you copying down? So when you find these documents, are you copying them down to your device or computer or whatever?
I haven't been saving the documents themselves, no. I link them to my ancestry when I know that I think they're right.
Yeah.
But I haven't saved them anywhere.
Yeah. So this is, sorry, I always feel bad giving you more jobs, but it's really good if you do actually copy them down to your computer or to the cloud or wherever, so you've got your own record, because while you're paying for a membership, you've got access to those documents. But let's say you decided you wanted to put your account on a pause to save a bit of money or whatever, which is perfectly reasonable to do that, then you'll find you'll be able to view your tree, but any of those documents you attach, they'll all be fuzzed out and you won't be able to read them. So that would be deeply frustrating. Whereas if you save a copy down to your computer, then you can look at them forever. We've got your copy for you. So I'd really recommend you do that. And then when you file name them, because I have a problem with some of the dads and sons or mothers and daughters, it's normally dads and sons, you know, they've got too many similar names happening, and so I'll put B1828, B1860, like for born, in their file name, so I know which one I'm talking about, so I can, otherwise you just don't know.
No, well, my instant thought, as soon as you said saving the files down, I was like, oh my god, this is going to end up like lots of subfolders that actually end up looking like a family tree, because you're going to have one big folder that's the start folder and then the branching out. And yeah, it sounds like another organizational task, but I appreciate what you're saying. It's definitely a good idea to have them at hand.
Yes. So some people do that, and they'll have, there's lots of different ways you can organize it. This is getting a bit off topic, but it is a really important topic. So you can have a folder, say, for each grandparental line. So you'd have 4 folders and put everything in there. Some people would organise it by surname, so they'll have all the records for a particular surname within there. I don't. I just have one massive folder. Well, I have a few massive folders. One is called, I have a massive folder called My Family History. In there, I have documents, and all my documents go in there. And I have another one called Photos. All my photos go in there. So in my head, like documents, a photo of a census would go in documents, whereas a photo of my granny and her dog will go in photos. So the photos are literally just people. But then the digital copies of historic records go in documents. And I just put them in one massive folder. And the reason why is everybody is part of a network. And it does my head in trying to split out. So you've got a census record and you want to have your, let's say it's got your great granny and your great grandpa on there. And do you want to put that in your great granny's line, or do you want to put it in your great grandpa's line? And you have to continuously have all these decisions about how you're going to divvy everything up. Whereas, and it's also data storage, isn't it? Because you're duplicating up the number of digital copies you've got. So I have one massive folder, one copy of each record so that I don't get in a muddle. And then I have a really particular fussy file name You surprised about that? That I have a really, 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 really super, super OCD file naming system. And so I put the surname first. Some people like to do the type of records. They might put census first, but I like to put the surname first. Then I put the first name. So it's a, and I put the head of the household. And then I will say what it is. And I'll say which website I got it from. So I might say, for instance, Alice, George Henry, 1891 census, and a couple of ANC for ancestry, or FMP from the past, SP, Scotland's people. And I don't tend to put a massive long folio number and things like that in it. Probably would have been really good practice to do that, but I don't do that. I find this is enough information for me. It's like a balance between having enough information, not getting in a muddle, and on the record, it has the information, so I don't need to include it there. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot already.
It's simple. It's really simple.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I'll give that a go at some point.
You don't have to do it. But I would say, for even if you just do it on a from now on basis, just when it says in the corner where it says save, and you save it to your computer, then save it to your computer.
I'm just feeling really, I've got that urge to just get back now. Now that I'm back on my main Excel list, I just want names, but I know I need to be sensible and slow and log it all properly, because it will help me later on.
It's really cool you go back to three times great-grandparents. That's really, really cool.
Is it? Cool.
Really good, yes. So your three times great-grandparents, your DNA matches will be like your fourth cousin. So you're on the right, you're on the outside edge. So I've found out about this before, but this is such a cool little formula. So with your first cousins, you'll definitely, if one of your first cousins did a DNA test in the same company with you, that you've tested with, you would match them. Okay. Same goes with your second cousins. If one of them did a DNA match, so your second cousins is the descendants you share, great grandparents, you share a pair of great grandparents, yeah, you will match them. Then if your third cousins did a DNA test with the same company, you would match 90% of them. So let's say you had 10 third cousins. So you share a pair of great-great-grandparents, you're going to match 9 of them, but there'll be one of those third cousins who you won't match, because you just won't have got the same segment as them. Yeah.
All right. Yep.
And then once you get to your fourth cousins, which is your three times great-grandparents, you're only going to match half of them. So in your match list, let's say you had 20 fourth cousins, you don't have way, way more, but let's say you had 20 fourth cousins, and they all tested, only 10 of them are going to turn up in your DNA match list, because he won't have inherited the same segments as all of them. It's cool, right. Isn't it?
It is cool. It's weird, though. Yeah, I'm slowly but surely learning about the DNA aspect of it all, the whole, like, sharing bits. It still confuses me, but I've watched a few videos. I think Karen Evans has done one, hasn't she, for us? I watched that, and it makes sense now about how the DNA is, like, shared out. So it does still baffle me that that there are people you're related to that you've got no matches with, but I understand why now. But it's still pretty weird, isn't it? It's a bizarre concept.
It is a bizarre concept. It is really strange. And I think when the autosomal tests first came out, we were all having to kind of learn on the hoof. And probably the experts had already sussed it all out. But I can remember feeling like if you got your DNA results back and one of your siblings got their DNA results back, and you have completely different ethnicity reports, you know, saying which countries you've got, and you go, what the hell's happening here? You know, why are they so different? Has something gone wrong? And it's like, no, nothing's gone wrong, but it is trying to, you know, work out why. Back to that DNA discoveries, but that explains that. This explains everything.
Brilliant.
So, and Karen, who you just mentioned, Karen's got an article in there on doing quick and dirty trees. So this is, you're going to have fun doing this. You know how much you're enjoying building out your family tree at the moment.
Yep.
So if you go back to your DNA match list, then sometimes you're going to find somebody, let's say you've got quite a high match, but you're not sure how you're related, and you're going to find yourself just building out their tree. So talk about rabbit holes.
Again, that terrifies me. I was looking yesterday and I saw somebody who had a match for one of, I don't know about the DNA aspect of it, but they had people matching my tree, and they had, and the names all matched up and the siblings matched up, but they had information I didn't have. And part of me was like, oh, I want to write this down and take it. But then I was like, I need to find this out for myself. I guess it's not cheating to make notes, is it, based on what they've found? But
no.
I want it to be concrete.
And also, it's potentially really fun, and they're relations at some level. And then, so out of the things you found so far, we've got quite a big kind of push on writing family history at the moment. So we've got some talks through the year by Julie Johnson on encouraging people to write up their family history. We've got some other things which are in the pipeline at the moment to do with encouraging people to just reflect on their own lives and write them up more. I don't want to say anything at the moment, but it's exciting because that's the whole point of it. When you're doing your family history, you kind of end up learning about, you learn about your family, you learn about you as well, don't you? And just what interests you for a start, even at the most meager level of learning about yourself. So have you been tempted to, or do you think you might get tempted to write up anything you found, like write it down like a little few paragraphs? Or
I'm not sure. It's interesting because, like, what you said the other week about these people that I was researching that maybe people have forgotten about, I like that idea that, I haven't rescued them, but, you know, the idea is I've remembered them, so they've been remembered. So I do feel it does need putting down on paper somewhere so it's noted. I'm obviously particularly thinking about the Tank Man, and then I feel like there is a story with this young daughter as well. And I don't know where I would put it, I think. That's my question mark. Where would I write this information down? Am I just creating like a Word document, storybook, or I don't know?
So yeah, there's a few different things you could do. And I think this writing up our research, whether you write it up as a kind of creative story or whether you write it up as a factual, this happened, that happened, that, it's all useful. It all makes it much more digestible for us when we come back to our research in the future. Much more fun to read a few paragraphs rather than trying to piece it all together again. And I think it does help us get better at family history, because when you write it down, then you realise you've still got some gaps in the story that you need to fill out. And so it's kind of a really good idea, not something that I have done. I occasionally write things up like this, but it makes you spot what you don't know while you're in the midst of doing that bit of research. And so it's so much easier, like when you're saying with sticking with a train of thought, to write it up. So back to where you could write it up, you could put it in a Word document. You could even put it in your ancestry tree when it says the life story bit. You can write a couple of paragraphs in there, which is probably the quickest and easiest way to do it and to save you any brain headache of you thinking, where am I going to put these Word documents? Oh no, I've lost the Word documents. You're saving your brain, really, aren't you?
Yeah.
So I'd say for the minute, just put them in the life story bit for the person. Click on their profile, click on their life story bit, and write it in there. And then, because I'm neurotic, I'd write it in there and then copy and paste it and email it to myself as a backup. It's just so annoying. I've lost so much work over the years. If I don't back it up, I'll lose it.
Yeah. I think it's quite interesting for me because, again, I was just looking for facts and figures and dates. I'd never expected myself to get drawn into the story aspect of it. And that's not even like the bigger stories, like, again, Tank Man or people dying, etc., for whatever ways. It's even like where they got married or where they lived. I didn't think I actually cared about that. Then again, looking at these marriage certificates, loads of them are still happening. I'm like, 200 years back, am I? Yeah, 200 years back, and they're still getting married in the same church.
Brilliant.
And I love it. I really love that fact. So I'm like, I need to make a note of this because I want to know who got married in this church and like how many of my relatives did. And it's just a cool little fact to add, isn't it? And it's
really cool. So there are other things that you could do. So you could write that up as a Word document and save it in, say, OneDrive or whatever, any cloud storage thing. And then in the relevant people's, let's say you've written up about this church, and it could go, our ancestors on this line and this line, saying the surnames, have got married in this parish church. The earliest date so far that I found is whatever it is, 1820. And then at the bottom, I'd even put your name, like put Nathan Ward, whatever date it is, today's date, because it's really helpful to yourself to know what you're doing. You can put a link to that in the profile, the life story profile bit. Yeah, you can put links in. Let me just check you can put a link in. You know, sometimes websites do really annoying things that you can't put a link in. But I would, when it's a general story like that, it's not just particular to one person, is it? So you need to find a way to be able to make it accessible to lots of different ancestors. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's I just like the fact that it sort of adds a bit of texture and to all of the story, and it suddenly puts much more meaning in that particular church for me personally. And it's like, oh, is it somewhere to go visit and think, yeah, all these people were here. It's also weird. It's, you know, when you think, you know, you're talking about writing yourself up, like, I think of myself in a certain way and I look at things in a certain way and I want to be meticulous and factual. And now I'm getting caught up in the romantic stories of whatever they are, whether they're sad or happy stories.
Yeah, I think the stories are, they're the bit which are going to interest other people. And there are lots other more, I guess they are the next level things that you can do. So for instance, you could take out an account with Storied, and on there, then you can just upload photos, it's normally like one photo and a story. You can write it, has an AI assistant who can help you write your family story. You could do it, and MyHeritage have got a lovely new product where you sign up for it, you pay for the year, and then they email you a prompt once a week to encourage you to write. But at the minute, you're trying to write up the stories of your research, so you kind of don't want to get put off your target and stick with where you're at for the minute, don't you?
Yeah. This is slightly tangential, but maybe kind of related, and I can't remember if I've said this before. But I've got photographs of some of my ancestors that I don't think are on Ancestry. I was going to put them on to obviously flesh out my tree and show pictures just to make it look more interesting for me. But will that prompt more people to maybe look at my tree if I do that?
If you add pictures?
In my head, I was like, right, I'm doing this thing. I want to make sure my facts are correct. But then obviously there's going to be crossover with lots of other people's trees. And they might have all these facts and figures and details, but then say, I don't know, I've got a picture of Clara Lupton, so I upload that picture, and all these people, I've got her on their tree, suddenly be like, I don't have this picture of Clara Lupton, and suddenly I become a bit more exposed to them, so they start looking at my tree, and then it suddenly creates a bit more interaction that maybe I'm not ready with for other humans.
Yes, I think that would happen, because what would happen is that Clara Lupton will get served up to people. Other people will get a hint about Clara Lupton, that there's this photo. And so then they'll go and find her. It'd be obvious that it's from your tree. It'll have credited that way.
Yeah.
And so then people will find you. And so then you may get people contacting you.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. I have got a few, I've done a few scans and taken a few photographs, but I've held off putting them on because of, I don't know why I've got a fear of it. I guess because then it suddenly becomes bigger. I'm so focused on the little bits that I've got, which they're not little, everything's massive. But to then get caught up in everybody else's trees, just it terrifies me a little bit.
I would, if you want the photos on there for you, and if you, as long as you know as well, if you put them on there, other people will copy them. So as long as you're fine with that, like I'm fine with that, but some people aren't fine with that. So as long as you're happy that other people are going to copy that picture you have of Clara and just pop it on their tree, probably won't say thank you, probably won't credit it to you, as long as you can live with that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Then I would add it up. And then let's say on the off chance that somebody does message you, probably you'll surprise yourself and you're probably really excited that somebody's messaged you. So you'll be fine with it in the moment. You'll be like, oh, it's really exciting. Somebody messaged you, and it'll be some sort of relation. They could be from anywhere in the world who's got a family connection to you, even if it's distant. So partly I think you'll be excited when they message you. I'm always really excited when people message me. Someone messaged me the other day and said that my granny was their granny. I'm like, she definitely wasn't, but I know who their granny was. It wasn't her. But I didn't want to, I was like, oh, I haven't got back to them yet. I don't want to be rude to them and go, no, that's my granny, it's not your granny. But anyway, so you'll be excited if somebody messages you. And also, if they message you and you find it a bit overwhelming, you can just reply to them and go, thank you for your message. I'm finding it all a bit overwhelming because I'm just new to family history, but I appreciate you contacting me. Thanks.
Yeah. I guess I'm just scared.
They have to be best buddies.
Yeah. I guess I'm just scared that it's going to highlight my shortcomings and lack of skill.
No, not at all. And how thorough you're being. And because you're being so meticulous, not copying other people, your tree, even if it's small, will probably be adding new things for other people's research. Because what happens quite a lot is lots of people, this goes back to the beginning of, it sounds really, I never like snobby, but because family history is really accessible online, lots of people dive into family history and don't have any family history education. And that's fine in lots of ways, but it means that lots of people are doing their family history, they're not keeping a research log, they're not double checking all their facts and figures, they're going on there, they're seeing the hints, they're following the hints, they're copying other people's trees, and they're like, wicked, I've got a massive tree now in just like one afternoon. Mm. And that was easy. And then people will copy it more and more, and it has like a safety in numbers thing. So the more people copy it, everyone goes, oh, well, everyone else thinks that Sandy was the mum, so Sandy's got to be the mum. It's like, well, might not be, but people lose confidence in their own research, whereas you are going to be a bit of a outsider because you're being brainwashed by nerdy old me. So you're going to have followed your own train of thought. You'll have looked at the records. You're adding the records to your tree. So your tree's going to look really best practice family history. You're doing everything you should do.
Okay.
But they're not probably somebody who, this is, am I turning into a really bossy old person? I don't know. But anyway.
Too scared to surf.
Yeah. Somebody who doesn't know anything about family history might look at your tree and go, oh, poor Nathan, he's only got 25 people on his tree. That's tiny. What a rubbish little tree. This other tree's got 7,500 people on it. And then someone else might look at your tree and go, wow, he's got 25 people, but he's got so many sources and he's clearly been looking at all the records. And this is a really small but well-researched tree. And they might look at a great big tree with thousands and thousands of people on it and no sources and go, oh, this is a depressing mess. How can I trust a word of it? Yeah. Mm. So it depends on people's perspective. So to be fair to the people who have thousands of people on their tree, theirs could be really well researched as well. And they may have all the sources on their desktop. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But you don't necessarily know.
I saw one day before yesterday that was had a different wife to the one that I potentially think I will have on my tree. So it was somebody's record that was, it was the right record for one part, but then they'd had this, I can't remember which person it was off the top of my head, but they'd married somebody who I didn't think they had. So I was like, I'm going to have to really be meticulous and work out which one's right here.
Yes.
It makes me feel right to be cautious. It's like, okay, take your time.
Yes, because it's once you do one wrong turn, you're on the wrong road. Aren't you? And you're going to find the wrong, say the wrong wife's parents, and that you're going to end up. Imagine anyone being that dippy to do that. That's just what I did about weeks and weeks ago on the podcast, and it sat there on my tree years and years wrong. Yeah, definitely. Anything if I do ever say anything useful to you, it's always because I've learnt it the hard way and done a mistake and go, oh, mustn't do that again.
Well, it's the best way to learn sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit painful, but memorable.
No.
Oh, this has been fun catching up with you.
Yes, you too. Feel really overloaded still, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I think you stick with your trains of thought and we can reconvene next week.
Yeah, I think I'm torn between again. I want to go back to my rabbit holes. Obviously, we discussed me going down to get some actual paying for some records to actually find death certificates, etc. But I do know my mum has got births and marriages and death certificates that I've not actually seen. They're in that big box. Mm. I just need to spend some time double check she hasn't got any of them before I go and order. So that's it's kind of made me pause on that rabbit hole because I'm being tight and I just want to save money if she's got those records. So now I do want to try and get back to my main line and go get generations back.
Sounds good. Good luck then.
Thank you.
So thanks for listening, everyone. I hope in amongst the waffle you found some useful tips, and we've got some really cool family history education opportunities happening over on our website. So that's www.family-tree.co.uk. And if you go to the menu and click webinars, and it's not just webinars, it's so much more than webinars. We've got masterclasses and courses, as well as webinars, club meetings, loads and loads of things to come along and learn about family history. So enjoy.